Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Sattvam,
sattvam,
rajas,
rajas.
What's that? What's on there?
Sweet on the top.
Tama,
tama,
iti,
iti,
prakriter,
prakriter,
gunas,
gunas,
ter,
ter.
Yuktaf,
yuktaf,
paraf,
paraf,
purusha,
purusha,
eka,
eka,
ihasya,
ihasya,
tatte,
tatte,
stityadaye,
stityadaye,
harir,
harir,
virinchi,
virinchi,
hareti,
hareti,
samgya,
samgya,
shrayamsi,
shrayamsi,
tatra,
tatra,
halau,
halau,
sattva,
sattva,
tanor,
tanor,
rinam,
rinam,
syu,
syu.
Sattvam rajasthama iti prakriter gunaister.
Sattvam rajasthama iti prakriter gunaister.
Yuktaf paraf purusha eka ihasya dhatte.
Yuktaf paraf purusha eka ihasya dhatte.
Stityaraye hari virinchi hare jisamgya.
Stityaraye hari virinchi hare jisamgya.
Shreyam sitatra kalusa Sattvatanor Narinamsyo
Sriyam Sitatra Kalusattvatanor Narinamsyo
Sattvam Rajasthama Iti Prakrite Gunaiste
Sattvam Rajasthama Iti Prakrite Gunaiste
Yuktav Parav Purusha Eka Ihasya Dhatte
Yuktav Parav Purusha Eka Ihasya Dhatte
Stityadhaye Hari Virinchi Hare Tisamgya Shreyam sitatra kalu sattvatanor narinamsyu
Shreyam sitatra kalu
Sattvam rajasthama iti prakriter gunaister
Sattvam rajasthama iti prakriter gunaister
Yuktav parav purusha eka ihasya dhatte
Yuktav parav purusha eka ihasya dhatte
Stityaraye hari virinchi hare jisamgya
Stityaraye hari virinchi hare jisamgya
Shreyam sitatra kalu sattvatanor narinamsyu Sattvam,
sattvam,
goodness,
goodness.
Raja,
raja,
passion,
passion.
Tama,
tama,
the darkness of ignorance,
the darkness of ignorance.
Iti,
iti,
thus,
thus.
Prakrite,
prakrite,
of the material nature,
of the material nature.
Guna,
guna,
qualities,
qualities.
Tai,
tai,
by them,
by them.
Yukta,
yukta,
associated with,
associated with.
Para,
para,
transcendental,
transcendental.
Purusha,
purusha,
the personality,
the personality.
Eka,
eka,
one,
one.
Iha asya,
iha asya,
of this material world,
of this material world.
Tatte,
tatte,
excess,
excess.
Stiti adaye,
stiti adaye,
for the matter of creation, maintenance, and destruction, etc. Hari,
Hari,
Vishnu,
Vishnu,
the personality of Godhead,
the personality of Godhead.
Virinchi,
Virinchi,
Brahma.
Brahma.
Hara,
Hara,
Lord Shiva,
Lord Shiva.
Iti,
iti,
thus,
thus.
Samgya,
samgya,
different features,
different features.
Shayamsi,
shayamsi,
ultimate benefit,
ultimate benefit.
Therein.
Therein.
Kalao.
Kalao.
Of course.
Of course.
Sattva.
Sattva.
Goodness.
Goodness.
Tano.
Tano.
Form.
Form.
Narinam.
Narinam.
Of the human being.
Of the human being.
Siu.
Siu.
Derived.
Derived.
Translation. The transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance. And just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction, he accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. Purport. The Lord Sri Krishna, by his plenary parts, should be rendering rendered devotional service, as explained above, is confirmed by this statement. Lord Sri Krishna and all his plenary parts are Vishnu Tattva, or the lordship of Godhead. From Sri Krishna, the next manifestation is Baladeva. From Baladeva is Sankarshan. From Sankarshan is Narayana. From Narayana, there is a second Sankarshan. And from this Sankarshan, the Vishnu Purusha avatars. The Vishnu, or the deity of the quality of goodness in the material world, is the Purusha avatar, known as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, or Paramatma. Brahma is the deity of Rajas, passion, and Shiva of ignorance. They are the three departmental heads of the three qualities of this material world. Creation is made possible by the goodness of Vishnu, and when it requires to be destroyed, Lord Shiva does it by Tandava Nritya. The materialist and the foolish human beings worship Brahma and Shiva respectively, but the pure transcendentalists worship the form of goodness Vishnu in his various forms. Vishnu is manifested by his millions and billions of integrated forms and separated forms. The integrated forms are called Godhead, and the separated forms are called living entities, or the jivas. Both the jivas and Godhead have their original spiritual forms. Jivas are sometimes subjected to the control of material energy, but the Vishnu forms are always controllers of this energy. When Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, appears in the material world, he comes to deliver the conditioned living beings who are under the material energy. Such living beings appear in the material world with intentions of being lords, and thus they become entrapped by the three modes of nature. As such, the living entities have to change their material coverings for undergoing different terms of imprisonment. The prison house of the material world is created by Brahma under instruction of the personality of Godhead, and at the conclusion of a kalpa, the whole thing is destroyed by Shiva. But as far as maintenance of the prison house is concerned, it is done by Vishnu, as much as the state prison house is maintained by the state. Anyone, therefore, who wishes to get out of this prison house of material existence, which is full of miseries like repetition of birth, death, disease, and old age, must please Lord Vishnu for such liberation. Lord Vishnu is worshipped by devotional service only. And if anyone has to continue prison life in the material world, he may ask for relative facilities for temporary relief from the material demigods like Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Varuna. No demigod, however, can release the imprisoned living being from the conditioned life of material existence. This can be done only by Vishnu. Therefore, the ultimate benefit may be derived from Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. So here is being pointed out that Vishnu is who is supposed to be worshipped. There are so many Devi Devatas, and they're all taking care of all these different functions by the different modes of nature. But the only one to be worshipped is Vishnu. So this is a very important point, because all the various demigods are there, they're performing their duties, the living being, the human being, is benefited by them. The living being owes a debt to them.
because they are performing these duties for them. So 33 million demigods are performing something that is beneficial for the human being. So the human being owes a debt to those demigods for that service. Then the difficulty comes, though, is how are you going to worship 33 million different personalities? That's the problem, because you can't worship one and leave the other. People do this. They'll worship the main ones. But all of them are who's doing the work, right? You know, you may, whatever you like, you're doing nice worship and all that, but then you're doing that through your voice, you're doing that through your eyes. Your eyes, they're, you know, you can still look at the deity because they're still moist. That means whoever's in charge of the, you know, the glands that put the water out and all that. So you're worshiping someone, but the people that allow you to do it, you know, you're leaving. So 33 million is what runs your life. So Gopalbhatta Goswami then mentions, therefore, it's an offense to worship one of them without worshiping the others. If you're going to worship them, you have to worship all of them. You can't just do some of them and leave others. All of them have to be worshipped. So then if they all have to be worshipped, then this creates a minor problem. Right? Like we were discussing the other day. Okay, if all the devotees want to come and bathe the deities. Okay, if they all get 13 seconds, then in, I think it was 6 or 7 hours, then you could bathe the deities. Right? Like that. So now that's, you know, a few thousand and five deities. Okay, so you just imagine, you know, 33 million. Yeah, and even you give them each an 11th of a second, you know, which is about as minimal as we can get in time, then it's going to take you a while, right? And before doing anything, then you should worship them. So then you won't be able to do a whole lot in this one lifetime, you know? You know, we'd have to calculate, okay, 33 million divided by 11, you know, that many seconds, then times 60, you know, times then the hours or days, you know, it would add up. So it's like every few years you might be able to take up some activity. Or you should just decide very seriously one activity you're going to do your whole life and not start anything else, so you only have to do it once. So it's a problem. Now, then, but the scriptures point out is that actually they're all just manifestations of the modes of nature. The modes of nature are getting everything done. Maya is doing everything. She is the external potency. The external potency is the shadow of the internal potency. That means then she has the same form as the internal. But it's only the shadow. You know, it's a reflection. Like you see the tree in the water, then it has all the same shape, color, size, texture, everything, by looks. But in reality, it has none of it. So it looks the same. So that means all the aspects of the spiritual world that are based on Satchidananda, she has in goodness, passion, and ignorance. And that means then all the demigods are just the potencies that make things work in the spiritual world. Those same potencies in their reflection are working in the material world. So those positions of operating those different aspects or combinations of the modes are the demigods. So then they take care of everything. So since that then is an expansion of the Lord and His devotees, therefore by worshipping Vishnu and Vishnu's devotees, then everything's accomplished. Because if you go to the source, then everything's done. Right? If you respect the person on the top, then all the secondary is already taken care of. So for Krishna, then that relationship like that is most important, because ultimately then the demigods, you worship the demigods, it goes back and it has to go to Krishna anyway, but you're not recognizing Krishna, so the relationship's not happening with Krishna, so it's not very pleasing to Krishna. Therefore then if we worship Vishnu, then it's nice, he's the actual one who it comes from. So that it mentions here is that you then have the Lord and His energy. So the Lord then has these different parts. It says Krishna is next manifestation is Baladeva, from Baladeva to Sankarsan. From Sankarshan you get Narayan, and from Narayan you get the second Sankarshan. So then from that Sankarshan is coming Karana Dakshay Vishnu. So then with this, then you'd have Baladeva as the first, then the second, the Sankarshan from him means Krishna Balaram in Mathura. Then from there, then there's another one, then you have Narayan. Okay. Yeah, and then is Narayan. Because from Sankarshan, then you get, technically it goes, expansions go through Sankarshan. Because actually once you go into Balaram, all the expansions are technically Balaram. But because he's the complete personality of Godhead, then there's four moods of Godhead, prominent moods. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. Vasudev is who performs the pastimes. Sankarshan establishes the situation and the relationships and sees that the proper establishment of what's proper is done and what's improper is removed. Prajumna creates the attraction and Aniruddha creates the example, you know, what should be done, like that. So then the platform of existence then has two aspects, that of establishing what is proper and then creating the attraction to the interactions that would happen based on that establishment of the position. Does that make sense? You're established as a position in a family, but there must be attraction to that family and other members of the family for there to be interaction. Right? So Sankarshan and Prajumna establish the relationships and the attraction for them. Vasudev is the lila, the pastimes, and Aniruddha is the example that is set by which you decide that this is how I should act. Right? Because you have to act in a particular, why would you choose a particular way to act? So that is because of looking at the example given by Aniruddha. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's how it's functioning. So Baladev expands into Narayan, and then there is a, from there he means then that Narayan expands into another Sankarshan. So then that makes then the Dwarka Balaram. Right? It means Balaram in Vrindavan expands as Sankarshan, who is Mathura Balaram, who expands into Mathura Krishna, who is Narayan. That Narayan expands again as Dwarka Baladev, who expands into Narayan. And then that expands out into the Chaturvyuha, and then from Sankarshan it keeps just going unlimitedly. But then from that Sankarshan in Dwarka, that Balaram, then expands Karana Daksha Vishnu from him, Garbha Daksha Vishnu from him, Kira Daksha Vishnu. So here this discussion is dealing with Kira Daksha Vishnu, because of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. It's Kira Daksha Vishnu. He is the Vishnu we're talking about here. He's the one that sits and sleeps in the milk ocean. So these are the... So then Brahma is the lord of passion and Shiva is the lord of ignorance or destruction. But they have, even those that... those two have come from Vishnu. Because it's Karana Daksha Vishnu. You don't have the manifestation of Shiva and Brahma there. But we see from Brahma Samhita that the Sadashiv and Hiranyagarbha, or is the Brahma aspect, the creation, maintenance, and destruction are there. Because he said here, he says creation is made possible by the goodness of Vishnu. Right? But we said Brahma creates. So that means then the creation is actually going on by Vishnu. In his mood is Hiranyagarbha. Then he manifests the universes and all the elements that are there. Then he separates those elements. He creates all the life forms. He creates all the planets and the places on the, you know, universe where people can live. He creates all that, but in its subtle form. Then Brahma comes and does the creation that we see. Right? But the concept of it, the blueprints of it, all the elements that you're going to build everything from are already created. Right? Then you have the engineer comes, takes them, puts them together, builds something. Right? So then you can say the engineer created the building. But generally people ask, who's the architect? They don't ask who's the engineer. If they want to build it, they like the work and it looks like a good job, the plastering's good, it's straight, then you ask who's the engineer. But who actually created the concept and everything, then everybody will look to the architect or to the person who the architect was hired by. You know, in other words, who's given the concept, who's created, who has the money, who's created everything that the engineer could work with. Because the engineer doesn't. He just puts together what you get. He just knows how to follow a blueprint. That's his specialty. So then we see is that it's possible because of Krishna. Then once you come into the material world where you're dealing with the modes, because before that you're not dealing with the modes. Karanadaksha Vishnu is not dealing with the modes. He's just creating, and then through his glance, which is destruction means ignorance. Now you can only live in the material world if you're in ignorance, right? You have to think that this reflection is something special, right? You have to think that what I see here is worth killing myself for, right? It's really worth it. I'll go out there, and what we're saying about the Pavarga, right? The last one, is, you know, or the first one, right? No, the second one, Fena. Means foaming at the mouth, right? Means you have to work. If you really want to get ahead, you got to foam at the mouth, right? Otherwise, it just doesn't work, right? So that means you have to be committed, right? No one does anything with great exertion unless he's really inspired. And he's only inspired unless he is focused. So that focus is either self, you know, inspired or from others. You know, like Prabhupada mentioned, I think it was about his daughter's marriage. She was 14. And he was, you know, trying to make some arrangements, but nothing was coming through. Then his wife said, if she's not married by within this year of 14, I'm jumping off a Howard Bridge. And so then, you know, immediately there's really serious focus. And the girl was married. You know, new avenues open up, new, you know, everything starts happening. So it's either one is inspired oneself, but we see like Srila Prabhupada then, you know, developing ISKCON, preaching and all that, that has been inspired. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and that he takes that, and now he takes that as his mission. So then he becomes self-inspired, though it originally comes from somewhere. So in this way, in any case, it's focus that gets anything done. Nothing happens if there's no focus. Just like you see, a person who doesn't really know what he's going to do in life doesn't do anything. And a person who knows, this is what I'm going to do, he does something. Right? And those who are ahead in the material world, then it's because they've made that focus. Right? If there's any one thing that's common in any sphere, whether it's political, or business, or intellectual, or arts, is they have a focus. This is what they want to do. This is what they're going to dedicate their life to. So then they do it, because there's nothing else there. So the same principle is there in spiritual life, that if that focus is there, then one moves nicely. So that focus then becomes the most important. So that's actually what makes things work. So we see is that you have to have then a focus on this material energy to work here. Therefore, there must be ignorance, right? Because you have to, you really have to be determined that you're going to enjoy that tree in the water. You're going to pick and smell its flowers. You're going to enjoy the fruit. You know, you're going to be able to take the bark and the roots and make medicines out of it. And, you know, you're going to enjoy the shade and the, you know, a nice freight. I mean, you have to be pretty determined. When every time you go to pick a flower, your fingers get wet, and you can't quite figure out. It gets a little rough, you know, rippled, and then, you know, you try to touch the bark, and the same thing happens. But you're so determined because of ignorance that, no, this tree is real, and I'm going to get something from it, that we try again and again. And then after a while, then we start to have a doubt. Hey, you know, there's something wrong here. Right? So then now you have a choice. Now is it there's no such thing as I've been cheated. All everybody's told me this tree is going to get me something. So now I just throw out this whole concept of the tree and it's all nothing. Right? It's either impersonal or void. Or I can re-inspire myself. Well, maybe I just didn't use the right technique. I moved too quickly or something. Or maybe I should use more slowly. You know, like the other day, we had a boy. The bees had moved in with all their bees hives. And so he wanted to check it out. He went up to it. Very slowly, he took his finger and very slowly pushed it all the way through the bees. You know, just to see if there was anything inside. You know, no, nothing inside. It's only bees. You know, when they first go and there's no wax. Okay, you know, so it's like, you know, some ignorance is there, and some focused determination, and then you engage in something that you, okay, I tried this way, you know, I went by and moved too quick, I got stung, I'll move real slow. Okay, so yeah, I didn't get stung, right? Great. Yes, I'm sure we could get a PhD out of that one, or something you could get, you know, a prize, or a, how you say, a patent, right, you know? The slow moving finger patent, you know. So then, like this, so ignorance has to be there. So then Krishna enters the Sadashiv. So it's the principle of ignorance. So technically speaking, that is your existence. Your existence is based on ignorance. Right? The spiritual realm is based on knowing your actual position. But here it's based on ignorance. So that's the platform of your existence. So that is sankarshan. Means either true knowledge or that covering of knowledge. So he deals with this aspect. So then that aspect of Shiva is coming from, Sadashiva is coming from sankarshan. Right? Because Karanadakshaya Vishnu is sankarshan. Right? Then Garbhadakshaya is Prajumna, because he creates the Garbhadakshaya enters it as the universal form. So the universal form, then you think that because he's entered it, then it looks nice. Right? You have some item because Vishnu's in it, then it looks good. But we think it's, but because of ignorance, because of sankarshan, right? Therefore, we don't know what it is. Right? Because that's the intelligence, so it's connected to the senses. So we just see what we perceive with the senses. We don't actually understand is that the thing is not attractive. Because Vishnu's in it, it's attractive. You know, it's just like you have something and you put some light inside, it looks attractive. But the thing itself is not. You know. So, or you put some fragrance on a silk flower. You smell, nice flower. But it's not, it's the fragrance exactly. The flower has no smell. It doesn't have anything. So he enters it in that way. And because of that, then you have this element of, there's that element of illusion. But at the same time, is because it's him, you can use the same thing and reverse it and use it in knowledge to get yourself out. That's how dealing with the same thing can put you in illusion or can take you out of illusion. Depending upon whether you see Vishnu in it or you don't. If you don't see him, you're attracted by it because you can't not be attracted by Vishnu. Right? The soul is only attracted by Vishnu. So you become attracted. But if you know it's him, then you become freed from the material concept that the thing you're attracted to, supposedly by the senses, is what's of value. No, you know it's Vishnu's of value. But if you don't see Vishnu in it, then you'll be attracted by the externals. So that goes for anything. You know, the body, you know, your clothes, the hair, the money, the house, the family, any possession you have, there's an attraction for it. If there wasn't an attraction, you wouldn't have it. So because that attraction's there, then you deal with it. Now it's a matter of, do you see Krishna in it? And therefore, by dealing with it, you become liberated, or you don't see Vishnu in it, and you see the externals. And so then you get more and more entangled. That's basically the choice. So sankarshan has both these aspects. So on the one where you become in ignorance and don't see it, that is then the deity in the material world of the triad of Shiva that we know when we think of Shiva. The other one, then that's actually sankarshan in the form of Sadashiv. Right? Like that, because he's entered it. Because Sadashiv, is Vishnu. But just Vishnu in the mood of the destroyer. or one who deals with the material energy. Right? Because nothing functions without him. It can't function without him. So he has to deal with it. But he doesn't deal with it as in the mood of Vishnu, I am the maintainer, or I am God. He deals with it in that mood of Shiva, I am the destroyer. So in that mood, he transforms. Therefore, we say Shiva is a transformation. Right? It's a different mood. But Sadashiva is non-different. It's Vishnu just in a different, you know, mood. But then Shambhu, then it transforms. So then material energy is Krishna's energy, but he doesn't deal with it. But in that transformed state of Shambhu, then he deals with it. So he's the Lord. Therefore, he is also Purusha. So Shiva Tattva is also Purusha. He's just transformed Vishnu Tattva. So because we know this transformation, therefore we don't make so much distinction. We know that we don't therefore separately worship Shiva. You know, say, oh, then it's all right to worship Shiva. No, because we know Shiva is actually, when it goes back in his original state, is Vishnu. So therefore we worship Sada Shiva. We don't worship Shambhu. Yeah, so Dvaitacharya is that. Therefore, you see, it's a difference. It's a transformation between Lord Chaitanya. I mean, Krishna, there's expansion there, because they're all expansions, because they're still Vishnu Tattva. But you have Krishna, who is the enjoyer. Then you have Baladev, who is enjoyer, but at the same time servant of Godhead. And you have Advaita, who is then the Lord of the material energy. You know, like that. So you get these three. Therefore, these three are the main manifestations of Godhead. There's unlimited expansions, but these are the main categories, you know, that we can easily see, so we can identify the differences in flavor. So then he comes in like that. Yeah. So here it says that Vishnu is manifested by his millions and billions of integrated forms and separated forms. It's unlimited. There's no limit. Because anything that there is, then Krishna is in connection with it. He's simultaneously here thinking about it and he is it. Does that make sense? He simultaneously is Krishna and he's simultaneously expanded as Balaram. So Balaram is him. You know, he can think of a perfect brother. Right? Krishna can think of what is a perfect brother. He is also that perfect brother. Right? He can think of what is the perfection of Godhead, and he can be that Godhead. So both happen simultaneously. But one is then in a mood of that, which is just various aspects of his original form, and others are where he just takes that one aspect, and that's the prominent, though the others are there. Does that make sense? It means all of the qualities are there, but because you shift where the prominence, it comes out different. It's a different flavor. You know, it just shifts, you know, like that. That's the whole thing, is you're shifting, and that creates the different moods. You know, how you say? Arjuna shoots Karna. It has a mood. You know, it has a drive to it. Karna is shot by Arjuna. It has a different flavor, right? It goes into a more soft, like that. So that's the principle, as you're going by, is you just change what's the emphasis. Or you can change it again, shot he was by Arjuna. So then that even takes it more. But now you take the verb and make that the prominent. You know, so are you making who's doing it, who is done to, or what is done? So it completely, it's saying exactly the same thing, but it has a different mood. So that's the thing. You're dealing Vishnu Tattva, you're dealing the same person, but there's a different mood, depending upon the expansion, and whether he's manifesting Sankarshan, Padjumna, Adiruddha, or Vasudeva. So like that, you get these different flavors. So everything's in Krishna, right? But the prominence is that of the enjoyer. But all the aspects are there. But in the other is then one aspect is made prominent. Like in the Shingadev, his anger, or his protection for his devotees, or his kindness for his, that's made prominent. So then it takes that form. like that. While the mood of he being the son of Mother Yashoda then takes that prominence, makes a different form. So it's just you take the ocean of rasa and whichever one you emphasize, then that takes a different form. That's the perfection of that rasa. Right? Because the rasa itself then has a form. Right? Just like you have a rasa can be expressed through music. It has, the music has a form. At the same time, as they do have forms of that raga. They have paintings of what that raga looks like. So the rasa then, when it is prominent, what it is, then that becomes what you interact with. Now, he's the ocean of rasa. So how do you bring that out? That's by the devotee worshipping it. When the devotee worships the Lord, then he brings out that particular aspect by what he relates to. In other words, Krishna says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. So you come in on reverence, he reciprocates in on reverence. You know, you come in a different form of affection, he reciprocates in that form. Mother Yashoda sees the ocean of rasa as her kid. So he responds as her child. Right? Sridham and Sudham see the ocean of rasa as their friend. So he responds as their friend. The gopis see him as their lover. He responds as their lover. So that's the principle. Is that whatever is the rasa, he'll reciprocate. So this makes the differences in the personalities of Godhead. Like that. So for certain rasas, then certain elements just don't manifest. Therefore, it's said Vishnu will manifest, how you say, 55 qualities in absolute fullness, and another 5 qualities in great quantity. Because they match the mood of being the Lord of Vaikuntha. But Krishna and Dwarka, then, or Narayan, we're talking about all these Narayan forms, it means Krishna and Balaram and Dwarka and Mathura, then they manifest 60% in full. Because they match the rasa there, because you're dealing with 5 rasas. Well, in Vaikuntha, you're only really dealing with 1. Because right? Even the relationship with Lakshmi is restricted. She just sits on his lap. That's all. There's nothing more is happening. So then when you go to Vrindavan, then all the qualities can be manifest, because then the rasas are such that everything can be shown. Because when there's restriction, you don't show as much, right? You're sitting with friends and this and that, and laughing, joking, and you know, so many aspects of your personality will manifest. But as soon as someone walks into the room that's not in that same form of intimacy, immediately all those intimate qualities shut down, and whatever then is favorable for that, and whoever's association you're in, that will manifest. Now you remove those friends you are with, and only that person you're with, then even more will disappear, and it'll pull back to that. You know, it's just like the high court judge. He's at the court. You know, he's at the court. It'll be when his mood is very formal. When he leaves the court, goes into the back room where all the barristers and all that are, it'll be another mood. It'll be more open and all that than when he's on the bench. Then, let's say his family shows up. Then it will have that similar intimacy of the barristers, but he'll stop using that language so much. And those references, and the families come, so then it will take on a mood of a little bit changed intimacy, but it won't be as intimate as when he's at the house, but it won't be as formal, you know, as when he's just with the others. It changes moods. Then when he leaves there and goes home, then those disappear, and then it's just the intimacy of the family. So, like that. Or each member of the family. When he's sitting with the son, then there'll be one mood. When he's sitting with the daughter, another mood. Sitting with the wife, another mood. So, it'll change. Like that. Sitting with his dog, another mood. So, like this. There'll be all these different moods that are there. Right? You know. So, this then is what's happening. So that's what's going on. Technically, what's happening there. So the 64, that means Krishna's in the most intimate, where he can do anything and no one will say anything. So therefore he takes that boldness to do things that will maintain the rasa, because he says he'll reciprocate. So Krishna therefore won't do anything that will break the rasa. Right? Like, you know, for fun he sometimes do, because he can do that to Mother Yashoda, because he knows he'll show the universal form. And she just becomes bewildered, so it's fun. But it just doesn't match the rasa. You know, it just can't, you know, like, you know, did I eat something I shouldn't have this morning? Or, you know, not getting enough sleep? Or what's going on, you know? So she becomes bewildered. But it's just for some fun. Immediately takes it back. But he can do anything, say anything, you know, he can steal butter, he can go out with other men's wives, he can, you know, do all kinds of crazy stuff, say all kinds of crazy things, you know, and everybody loves him. But in Vaikuntha, he couldn't do that. Brahma comes down and wants to see the personality of Godhead. He comes down and he sees his kid, you know, holding some food in his left hand and shucking and jiving with all the kids and all that, and you know, and so then he thinks, no, this can't be God. So, but everybody says he is, but you know, I don't believe it. So let's have some fun, right? So then that whole Brahma Vimohan Leela comes up, because in his rasa with Krishna, he can't understand it, right? You know, just like the wife may not be able to understand how the high court judge sits down in the back rooms and jokes and laughs with the other barristers. You know, she wouldn't understand. Just, you know, that's not my husband, you know. Like that. So, therefore, you have all these different moods. So, he therefore only manifests those that do. But sometimes he'll do to show what's higher and what's lower. So, therefore, he does this to show that his affection isn't as great as others. Because he'll just relax with the others, but he won't relax with Brahma and Shiva, because they're not relaxed. Right. Okay. So then the bottom line comes, if we want to get out of here, then we have to please Vishnu. Because he's the one that's running the show, he's the one that even makes what we think is attractive about this place, it's him. But it's not enough to say, oh, it's him, and then go on being materially attracted. You have to be able to practically see him in it and do it for him. Because if it's him, how are you going to deal with it? Right? Ah, yeah, money is Krishna. Yeah, so I can do whatever I like. Yeah, no. But if it's Krishna, then you have to deal with Krishna like he likes. Like in dealing with the deity, we deal with the deity how the deity likes, right? The rules are there, Pancharatra. We don't deal how we like. You know, we deal how we're supposed to deal. So the same way is then, therefore, Krishna as money wants to be dealt with like this. Right? Krishna as, you know, furniture wants to be dealt with like this. You know, as a wife, like this. As a son, like this. As a daughter, like this. You know, as a house, like this. You know, as a position, like this. So whatever it is, that's how it goes. So therefore the rules and regulations come. So seeing that, then it's done like that. Then it is, you're dealing with Krishna. Therefore the devotee, no matter what position he's in, he's liberated. That's the Vaishnava. He sees Vishnu in everything. The Brahman has knowledge that Vishnu is supreme. He may or may not see Krishna in everything. Therefore he might be a Karmakandi or a Gyanakandi or a Upasana, like this. But as a devotee, then he sees Krishna in everything. Therefore, the neophyte means there's a mix. He knows Krishna is in everything, but he doesn't actually see him in everything. So, therefore, he still has some attractions to the material energy in areas where he doesn't see Krishna in it. So it's just a matter of time and practice that knowledge comes and detachment comes, and he'll start to see Krishna in everything. Right? Then this naturally, then that will mature into a platform of that knowledge. And then seeing that, then his drive for preaching and all that, then will also then naturally increase. Because he sees Krishna. He sees how you can see Krishna in everything you're doing. like that. That's what Prabhupada can say. You don't have to change anything. You just have to change your consciousness. Live the same life you're living. Change your consciousness. See Krishna in it. And then by seeing Krishna in it, naturally, you're going to start dealing with Krishna the way Krishna likes. So your external life will automatically transform if you change the consciousness. But if you change the external form, you may not change the consciousness. You know, you have like a smarta, very pukka, follows all the rules, does everything very nicely, but is not a devotee. So they're just as materialistic as the non-devotees, or the, let's say, those who are non-Vedic. But the difference is he's pious, he's smarter. He knows that I am attracted to material energy. The only way to really deal with it is according to rules. So I deal with the rules, but I don't actually see the person behind it. Therefore, I am entangled, but I'm entangled in a pious way. Right? You're attracted by the material object. You don't follow the rules, and you don't see Krishna, you go to hell. You follow the rules, but don't see Krishna, you go to heaven. Right? You follow the rules and see Krishna, you go back to Godhead. Right? Of course, now, then the thought is, but what if I don't follow the rules, but I see Krishna? Yes. What about that one? But then, the point is that if we actually see it as Krishna, then, in the beginning, we may do what we want with him, but eventually, then, we have to come to the point, if we really love Krishna, we should do with him as he likes. So then, that it will naturally go that way. So in the beginning, the externals are not ideal, but you've changed the consciousness. So whatever is actually practical and natural will automatically come, if that consciousness has really been changed. If it hasn't, then it won't change. That's why you always have to be careful, is it that the consciousness has changed, but the situation is such that it's not ideal? But it's practical, so that practicalness is not something that you're attached to. It's just what you're doing, because that's what happens now, and tomorrow if it changes, then we'll move on. Or if we start to rationalize? If we start to rationalize that this is fine, means we're not actually attached to Krishna, we're attached to the thing. But we somehow or another want to put something on it. So what we're trying to do is turn it into a pious thing. But instead of using the Shastras, we're creating our own religion. Right? And that's all. Because religion means what's the nature of it, the inherent nature of it. So we're trying to say the inherent nature is this. You know, oh, it's Kali Yuga, you can't do any of those things anyway. So we're trying to say the inherent religion of the thing is this. But religion is given by God. So we pick and choose a few from the scriptures, put a few things together, and try to say, okay, see, yeah, this is fine. But that's called apasampadaya, so it's not a recommended process. It's as it's given in the parampara, but time, place, and circumstance, but we're not attached to time, place, and circumstance. Therefore, if we do like this, then we do. Right? It means we have some chapati flour, and we have some ghee, and we have some spinach, right? And we have a tawa, and we have a pot. Okay, then we make chapatis and spinach, right? But if we have white flour, and we have olive oil, and we have a big pot, then we have ravioli, right? So it's depending upon the situation, then you do what is best for Krishna, like that. That's the whole idea. But we're not attached to what it means. We want to please Krishna. This is what Krishna has provided. This is what we do. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's just time, place, and circumstances, and it works. Yeah. So the final point Prabhupada says is, therefore the ultimate benefit may be derived from Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. Is the ultimate benefit can only be gotten from him, because he's the source of all the other demigods. And therefore, their benefits you can get from them are coming from him anyway. But they are limited, while he's unlimited. And they can't free you from the material energy because they themselves are caught up in it. They're doing the offices of material energy, and they themselves are in that office because they're attracted to it. Right? Pure devotees aren't the demigods. Right? They may become, but you don't get a position of a demigod because you're a pure devotee. Right? Neophytes get the position of demigods. Pure devotees, they don't. They always just continue in the devotional line. Like that. So demigods are definitely devotees. They accept Vishnu, they worship Vishnu, but they get distracted by material opulence and facilities. So that's, but they are the most pious, the most situated, so they're given that, as that is their service to Krishna. But those who are then pure devotees, they don't get involved like that. They always, you know, if they perfect themselves, go back to Godhead, or take birth in devotee family, move on like this. They won't leave that circle. So that's the okay. Any questions or comments?
Sounds now very difficult. Because if everything comes from Krishna, he's Bhagavan, so the bhagas belongs to him only.
Yes.
So if we are attracted to any one of these bhagas thinking he's us, we cannot get bhakti.
Yes. So, yeah, could you hear? He's saying is that if Krishna is everything, that means all the opulences are him. That means that if someone is attracted by opulence, that means then we're not, you know, that's not good because it's Krishna's. It's Krishna and it belongs to him. So that's why the whole process is there of devotional service, of dovetailing. That's why the Pancharatrik and the, all of them, Bhagavad also helps us too, but the processes of devotional service help us to dovetail those material needs or desires in the Lord's service. Because so that's how one decides how to situate yourself within the social strata of the Vaishnava community. Is what are those particular material attractions? What opulences of Krishna am I attracted to? And you know, what is my degree of understanding, realization, knowledge, detachment in dealing with them? So then, one chooses a position that matches that. You know? Like that. Then you engage those in his service. So that the actual point is that they still belong to Krishna, but to, in his pastime of operating the material world, he either will take care of it himself or through his offices, or you can volunteer to assist in that service. Right? So the man, Krishna's already taking care of the family. But the man can volunteer that I will take up that endeavor to take care of the family on your behalf. Because I have those attachments to that particular kind of opulence and facilities. So therefore, on your behalf, I'll do that work for you. Then those things become connected to Krishna. And the more you can connect them, the more you become detached from them. So that way, then everything can be connected to him. And then if it's understood what is the, and since it's him, he writes the rules on it. You know, how you should deal. Okay, how does the husband do with the wife? Wife with the husband. You know, the father with the daughter, father with the son, mother with the daughter, mother with the son. You know, the children with the parents. You know, like this. All those different things. How do they deal with the money? How do they deal with the cooking? How do they deal with the pots? How do they deal with their cleanliness standards? Where does the bathroom go? You know, all these different things. You know, so then you choose. Because you could choose anything. Depending on what you're taking as important, just like if we take cleanliness as important, then the kitchen is one room, the toilet is another room. But if we take practicalness of getting rid of gross items of dirt, then I've seen houses where the toilet is in the kitchen. You know? I'm not joking. They use, you know, the Indian style toilet, so it's in the floor, so it's like a monster drain. So everything, you wash the whole kitchen, it can be all just flushed down the toilet. It's not one or two. I think there's millions of houses like that. So there's a certain community of so-called human population who considers that this is a great, that's a great solution. You know? Like that. And, you know, subtleties aren't really their, how do you say?
Forte.
Forte, yeah. So, you know, they don't mind, you know. You know, the ma's cooking lunch and you're using the toilet. It doesn't matter. You know, just, you know, like that. So, depending on what you do, you could put it together anyway. So then the idea is let me put it together the way Krishna likes. Because we may say, oh, this is just practical. But another community of human beings may not say that's practical. You know? They'll say it's more practical to do it another way. So therefore you get these completely different cultural paradigms. Because they'll organize the basic human needs in a different way. So the Vedic, because liberation is the most important, then the Dharma Artha Kama will be reorganized for that. You know, but if economics is more, then you'll organize the others for that. Or if sense gratification, you'll reorganize the others for that. You know? So like that. You become, you know, you're with one person, you enjoy your senses, and then you become tired of that, and you're liberated from that relationship. And then you go and find a new one. So, you know, liberation is included. Yes, yeah, so I've been liberated from that last marriage, and now I'm free to go on to the next one, you know, like that. So, like that, you can, does that make some sense? So the whole idea is, it's the science of how to see Krishna in what our attachments are, and to just be realistic about it, because any position is good. Because our point is to go back to Godhead. We're just trying to get out of here. You know, we're not trying to do something else. So therefore, it works nicely that way. But if it's we work on certain other things, then the paradigm that looks bad. You know, you take the American paradigm, then it's like, no, whoever's the senior position, that's better. So I got to get there. You know, and you start off in the ghetto and you claw your way up to the top until you're sitting on top of the pile. Right? You know, it's king of the mountain paradigm. You know, but if you go back into, you know, some of the European and some of the others, then you know you're in this particular social strata and you can be comfortable there and there's no need to try to go for something else. You just, it's already there and it works for you. You know, you're here, you know, you're just one of the boys and it works for you. There's no problem. You don't have that feeling that, well, unless I'm sitting on top of the pile, I can't be happy. So then it works different. So the principle is if we drop these things of one position's better than the other, and we just come to the point is what position matches my actual conditioned nature is the best, then life's very easy. Then life becomes very easy, because it doesn't matter for Krishna what position you take. The gopis are the topmost devotees, right? And they're women, and they're women of the cowherd community. You know, so nothing special from that point of view. You know, they're not big queens, they're not big wives of Brahmins or rishis, you know, like that. So we take these kind of statuses to, you know, nothing, just cowherd girls, you know, uneducated, just simple girls. But they're the topmost. So that's the whole point, is the devotion. So you can engage any system in Krishna's service. So that's the point. It's not that one's better than the other. Then you say, yeah, you know, all this Brahmin business, yeah, forget that. No, but that's just rationalizing that therefore my position is less than a Brahmin or other than a Brahmin is better. It's still just trying to, you know, spin the tables to make it, yes, prestigious. You know, yeah, you look at those yogic Brahmins, you know, that they couldn't even recognize Krishna. You know, their wives, you know, those were devotees. Yeah, they knew what was going on. Those Brahmins, like that. So, that's not the point. Is that what is your position? You do that. So it doesn't matter what varna, what ashram, if that matches your nature, you do it, you will go back to Godhead. That's all, because you see Krishna in everything you're doing. So therefore you become detached from it at the same time as you use it properly in Krishna's service. See, technical, generally what happens is at the point one becomes detached, one gives up acting. But then if you give up acting, means there's no service. If there's no service, where's the show of devotion? Right? Just that I say, yes, I'm so devoted to you, Krishna. It's kind of like, okay, yeah, so, done. You know? 64 items of devotional service, you'll notice that generally they're all active. You know, body, mind, or words are doing something. Right? It's not just saying yes. No, it's something's going on. So then one still has to continue. Right? I am active because this is my money. Then I find out, oh, it's actually Krishna's money. And it's got to be, okay, so then I have no need money. I'm not attached. Yeah. Okay. But one will still try to figure out profit in some other way. One will give up, you know what I'm saying? One will give up the profit in pieces of colored paper with faces on them and numbers. Then it'll go into something else. You know, you'll find profit and loss in another area. Because that's the nature. So therefore you engage that nature in Krishna's service. So you're detached because it's not yours, it's Krishna's. But at the same time you're fully engaged because you're taking that medium and doing wonderful things for Krishna. You know, raising money, dealing with money, somehow or another creating the economics that then everything else can go on. So that becomes nice. You know, that's the whole point. You know, the cowherd men of Vrindavan are generating economics so that they can worship Krishna. They have nice things to offer Krishna. It's not that they're attached to their money. They're attached to Krishna. But to serve Krishna, they want to serve Krishna through the medium of feeding him, dressing him, giving a nice place to stay and all that. You don't get a palace, you know, with you know, nothing in your pocket. Right? You know, Nanda Baba didn't just build that house with no, you know, no cash. Yeah, no resources. Means he had the resources to build that palace. Why did he build that palace? Just to please Krishna. Right? Why does he have his whole, you know, a wall around the whole, you know, the whole fortress? Because to protect Krishna. Like that. So it's all being done. All of their economics are simply focused on Krishna. So that's a side thing. The occupation is a side thing. The real thing is their devotion to Krishna. Like that. Does that make some sense?
Not to brag.
Yeah, not to brag. Also, if you brag, then you also lose the benefit. It said, like, if you've done a great, you know, austerity, and then you tell others, yeah, so you lose the benefit. You know, or you gave a nice charity, tell, yeah, so I'm charitable. You know, you lose the benefit. So that's the thing, is that takes self-control, is to be able to do something wonderful and then say nothing about it. You know, others may notice, they may say, that's their business, we don't say. Like that. Then it becomes nice, then it's cultured. You know, no one appreciates the guy who's very pious and lets everybody know he's very pious. You know, like that. And no one appreciates, you know. I mean, he'll be tolerated because he gives so much donations and that, but nobody appreciates them as a person. He's appreciated as a donor. But as a person, no. You know, because it's just arrogant. You know, like that. Anything else or something? Here. Oh, yes. He was just getting attention.
You study of mind. What could be some of the practical things you could apply now to devotees, but then they go around it impractical?
what could we apply from Manu that is practical?
Yes, but it may seem the general populace.
But to the general populace may seem impractical. principles from Manu. Respect of authority. You know, it's because there's a sense of justice that's inherent in the soul. I don't know all the qualities, but that I remember, I think justice is one of them. It's kind of inherent. So there's always, or at least it's that I am the controller, so it should go the way I want. If it goes against the way I want, there's something unjust going on. So justice becomes very important. And then because of this, then you think things should go the way they should. So basically, let's say you take a, let's take a civilized, you know, sophisticated Western paradigm. Okay, now you take, let's say, you take American. Okay, now you'll basically follow the authority in principle. If you feel, then we're taking a point if we think the authority is wrong. We'll basically follow in principle, but we'll get it done in our own way. And even though we're kind of cheating in the in between, and we may even make some snide comments to the guy in charge or to others, because we're actually working for the ultimate, you know, fulfillment of that order or the ultimate good, when we actually get the result, then everyone will appreciate. And even the guy on top will say, well, okay, you did a good job. I would have done it another way. And, you know, you got to work on your attitude, but you got it done. So lack of respect, if it's not too severe and it's not unprogressive for actually getting the work done, is tolerated. You know, you take English standard, then they'll never, they may not like, they may talk with their friends quietly that they don't like, but to the person they'll never go against, and because he said it, he gets the rap anyway. So then they do it, and if it doesn't go good, then his boss is going to kick, you know, the guy above him, not you, because you just did what you're supposed to. So now, in that, you see, one would consider it's practical, one would consider it's not. Because one is looking at it from, I am going to get the I'm going to get the praise for the result of the work done. Therefore, what the guy above me said is not going to make it work right. Therefore, I'm going to look stupid. Therefore, I'm going to go against authority and do whatever it takes to get it done right, even if that means insulting or arguing with the authority or putting him down or going over his head or whatever it takes. Because I'm what's important, and I, as the doer, is important. Then you take the other paradigm, it's the duty is important, and that I am known for one who does my duty properly. Right? In other words, they're both active. One is I'm the doer, and one is I am dutiful. So you see, the dutifulness is more noble. The other one is, you know, has a different, but that, you know, matches the, you know, American dream.
Egocentric.
Yeah, it's egocentric, rather than more of a social. I fit into the society as a dutiful person. No, and it's the other one is I am the society. If I don't like it, I change it. You know? So then you have that principle, is that the duty is there. So then it's done. And then if the, you know if it's wrong, you see what's wrong with it, but you've done what you're, what is there. And the people above your authority are intelligent. They, because everybody works on this duty, then they know it's not your fault. It's the guy who told you to do it. So he'll get in trouble. You know, but because you've been doing a good job, then you may move up. You'll move up anyway. The other one, unless you've done the good job, then it's not going to be seen. You know, if it comes in your resume that you did this, 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 then you move up. It doesn't, it's not you. No, but the other one is because you're dutiful this, you move up. So to that degree of duty, then you can function on a bigger scale. So that might be seen as impractical in some circles. Or let's say marriage based on qualities rather than mutual sensual attraction. You know? It's just like you go and buy clothes. It's just what looks good, not necessarily what is good. I mean, you take something that lasts, works good, and this and that, and never have to, then it's, you know, maybe a pair of overalls, you know. But, you know, some of these other dress things aren't necessarily, you know, the best, I guess, things done, you know. So it's just based on the externals of the looks and the prestige of that. So it's based on something. There is a value system of prestige. And so then that's there. You know, it's something new, this, that. You know, the latest. You know. So then it's considered important. But if you stick to the traditional things, they're always in fashion. They always work. They always, you know, something traditional is always good. Right? It means you can build a building today by, you know, traditional architecture. You can dress in tradition, and it looks good. And other things come and go. So it's, you can function on a thing of what is actually, what makes family life work. It's the relationships. And those relationships are how the bodies, mind, and intelligence, and egos interact. Right? You don't just, means by the modern scenario, then one sits around on benches and looks at each other and one is very satisfied. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, more practical things like paying bills, getting the dishes washed, throwing out the garbage, then I guess they could hold hands and go out to the garbage together, you know, with a smile and tip it over together. Can come back, one can turn on the tap and the other one can stick in the hand that they're not holding hands with and rinse out the garbage. You know, I mean, I guess you could do it, but I'm not so sure. Generally when you hear of, you know, poetry and other things, they're not mentioning the romantic situations of throwing out the garbage together or, yeah, or, you know, mowing the lawn together, or, you know, stuff like that, you know. Different things, changing the diapers together, you know, very romantic moments. So that may be seen as impractical, but if you look at it in the reality of what is marriage life, it's not sitting around holding hands and smiling at each other. It's a practical interaction on day-to-day, you know, real needs. You have a need, and that's why you're in that ashram, and you come to that ashram to fulfill those needs. You know? And if you don't fulfill those needs, then there's frustration. Frustration is anger. Anger means divorce. Right? So that means they don't know what they're doing. But still, it'll be seen as impractical. Planning a family. You know, it's just when the mood arises, then, you know, things happen, you know. But that's okay. And then you have kids that just, their moods arise and things happen. You know, and, you know, he's going, I don't think this is my kid. I think it's your kid. No, no, it's your kid. I know it's your kid. No, no. Maybe the nurses, you know, switched them in the hospital. There was a mistake. You know, you get all these kind of comments, you know. Like when the kid does something wrong, then one parent says, he's your kid, you know. And that means you take care and I'm not dealing with this. Because these are stuff, because they have natures that are different. Because the mind's not focused, you can attract anything. You know, I mean, there's a lot of variety. If you look at your personality, you know, you have your good moments and you have your bad moments. So, you know, do you want to live with one of your bad moments the rest of your life? You know, so that's it. So therefore, look at what are your good qualities and okay, let's try for something like that, you know. I mean, I like myself, you know, I've been living with myself all this time and so I'm not such a bad person and, you know, the spouse has married me, so they pretty much think we're not such a bad person. So, you know, let's stick to the upside, you know, okay, you know, rather than the downside, you know. So that's the thing, that would be seen as not looked down upon. Another aspect would be education, is that you focus fully on education without getting involved in any way in the Grihastha Ashram until your main education is done. It means you're educated enough to function socially, spiritually, and economically. Like that. Then, naturally, the human being means one who inquires, means he's going to spend the rest of his life studying and augmenting his knowledge and practice and all that. But enough that it takes to establish yourself in whatever way you see yourself as fitting into the social system, that should be done before coming in contact. So that won't be seen as practical. Now I've even heard devotee parents say is that, you know, the boys and girls should associate because then they get to know each other and then there's no freak out when they get out of Gurukul and that because they've been away from girls so long, they get so enamored and like that. But we see that the same stupidness goes on because, as we mentioned before in previous discussions, just sitting and smiling and, you know, harassing each other doesn't mean that you know what a girl is or a boy is, right? Boys really get to know what girls are by, you know, running by and pulling up their ponytail or throwing a ball at them or making some stupid comment that makes them upset, right? Isn't that the real way you get to know what a girl is, right? So, and that's why you have such great, you know, marriage institutions these days, because boys really know what girls are, right? You know, so they really know how to deal with them and interact with them and take care of what their needs are and that, right? You know, every girl needs a soccer ball bounced off her head, you know, at least twice a week. Otherwise, how is she going to function? She'll feel neglected, you know, it's like that, you know. And you look around, you look at every, I guarantee you could go into practically every house, every house where there's been a divorce, and if you check back and you investigate, there was no soccer ball in the living room. So that means all those women never got a ball bounced off their head, you know, regularly. So that means they felt neglected. So naturally, what are you going to expect? It'll end a divorce. You can check it scientifically, right? Anyways, right? Like that, and you know, and many of them don't even have ponytails or pigtails for the boys to pull on or stick in inkwells or anything. So how is the boy supposed to interact, you know? The girl's not creating the facility for natural boy-girl interaction. So no wonder marriages don't work, you know. It's like, you know, what to do? You know, they can't figure it out. You know? Like that, you know. Of course, you have snowballs, and it's a real wonder how in India they keep marriages together, because you don't have any snowballs to throw at the girls, you know. Like that. I don't know how they do it here. You know? So, I don't know. You know, so that's the whole thing is that actually knowing who's there in the interior. So, the next one was on education, is therefore it's a different thing. Shastra Chakshu. The boy knows how to be dutiful as a man. Then he can interact with a woman who knows how to be dutiful as a woman. The two go together automatically. You know, it's not separate. You know, it's like in the West, you have to have a textbook and ask to show you all the pictures and tell you, okay, this is what you do. Okay, like that. Somehow or another, over in this part of the world, people don't, you know, not educated at all, and they got a billion of them here. You know, you go over to the next country, there's a billion of them over there. You know? So it's like, without education, they're doing pretty good, you know. It's just like the modes seem to have a way of making men and women, you know, match. I don't know, you know, it's like, it's amazing how, you know, but believe it or not, you know, like that, it's somehow or another, what's it, fact is stranger than fiction, right? Like that, it's like somehow or another, without education, you know. So, that's the point is that you have a boy that's nicely trained, a girl that's nicely trained, and things will work out for them. Because by duty, you never step over the line. The reason that the Gandharva system is so prominent in the West is because it's the only time in their existence between man and woman, basically, that they really felt a full intensity of interaction. Because both parties were super sensitive. to do nothing that would displease the other. Right? So if that is actually, if you look at it, that's what's really working. So now, the Vedic system is you perform your duty. Right? The other one is you're sensitive to the other's needs. And you don't do anything that would be inappropriate from your side, and try to fulfill the needs of the other side. Now if you really look at it, that's duty. Right? The husband's trying to perform his, whatever he's supposed to do properly, and fulfill the needs of the wife, and vice versa. She's trying to do what is just matches her nature and fulfill the needs of the husband. Right? So it works. So that's the thing. You want something, but the difference is the goal. The goal of the sensitivity before marriage is to get married. Once you've got married, the need for sensitivity is removed. Right? It's a temporary manifestation. And that's why people can't figure out, hey, what happened? Because the only person, but the other is you're sensitive to make the relationship work. So therefore it's based on something that will function a whole lifetime. So it's a whole different paradigm. So what taste the one gets in the one, the other one gets in the other. But because of the nature of it, they just, it's condensed. So therefore it seems like more. You know? But that's it. You know, it's just like this. You take a kilo of milk, and you cook it down into burfi. Okay, by taking that, you know, whatever it is, you know, one or two pieces of burfi, you've actually eaten a whole liter of milk. Now, and if you stick to one or two pieces of burfi, you'll survive. Now, you eat 20 pieces of burfi, you kill yourself. Right? So that's the problem. Is that the Vedic is you take a lifetime, and that interaction based on that sensitivity of duty, that will be tasted throughout at a certain level. But that level shouldn't be so intense you forget about your spiritual life and seeing Krishna within it. Right? Because you still have to be able to see Krishna within all the intensity of what goes on in the household ashram. So you should have a full experience that's intense enough that it catches the attention, you feel the needs are fulfilled, but it can't overwhelm. Right? Young couples, you ask them how many rounds they get done. You know, how much they read. How much they don't. Because they've taken that lifetime of interaction and squashed it down into, you know, a few months or a few, whatever it is.
One of these together, instead of to get there.
Yeah, well, they're to get there, to get the marriage, and then once that, then hurry ball, that is okay. Now that, you know, then the girl can, you know, I used to come out with her curlers on, and, you know, without her makeup, and, you know, this stuff. That's kind of like, I'll have to ask my mother about this. So then. It comes out to a whole different thing. So if it's understood is that it's not a loss, it's that the same principles are what make anything function. It's just where you put those principles. You know, is it speculative or is it real? That's the whole point that one is trying to get to. You know, so that's their cleanliness. Cleanliness is not a popular thing. You know, it's seen that it's a problem. But, you know, so is making money. But that's, you have to do. That's practical. But why do you have to make money? So then you have facility. Money is not the goal. It's so then you have something you do something with. You can create facilities in that. So cleanliness then creates an atmosphere or the facility, environment in which then the mode of goodness can manifest. Mode of goodness, then you can think of Krishna. So if you're not clean, then you won't think of Krishna. Right? So the same way as you don't have money, they don't have the facilities to do whatever kind of service you want to do. So it's just as practical, but because it's subtle, and that's never been a consideration in making money, and it's natural, that's God-given. Right? Brahmins work by these nine qualities. Right? And the Gita says, Kshatriyas, then they are resourceful, you know, protect this, that, qualities. Vaishyas, business, banking, you know, cow protection, and agriculture. It doesn't mention any good qualities. You can be the biggest demon on the planet and make good money. And in fact, you might even be able to put the two together. The bigger demons make more money than the... So that's the point. Economics, technically it looks like it doesn't. Of course, we know piety and all this, that they're only working from there. But the endeavor that they did and got it through that medium, and that's there. You know, there's another realm of this, but just pointing out the element of endeavor. So it doesn't require any qualities. So because the Western culture is basically works on that, it's just whatever gets it done, whatever makes your money. You know, whatever you have to do, you know, you may mess up the other guy and he loses all his money. You know, well, the Vedic is everyone should be able to function together. Right? Means monopoly is the thing they always try for in the West, but because it's so dangerous, therefore they even outlaw it. But that's what everybody tries for. You get as close to monopoly as you can. You know? But you see, like, you go to Calcutta, I was always surprised. You see 20 guys with one small basket full of oranges, and they're all sitting in a line right next to each other and yakking with each other. And then when somebody comes, then they start, you know, quoting their price. All 20 of them in one spot, all of them are making money. There's no monopoly.
Cooperation.
Yeah, they cooperate. You know, but like that. So they get things cheaper because it all comes to one place. They can buy them cheaper. They can sell them. So then it's just a matter of who is more clever to pick what thing to price to say and what attitude to have that would attract that one. So the first one tries his luck. He misses it. The second one sees that, adjusts it. He catches him. Right? You know? And that, but then that's because the guy walked this way. But next time the guy walks this way. So then this guy does it and makes a mistake, and this guy gets it. So in this way, then it works for them.
Faith also.
Yeah.
They know they have the share.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, that's also the point. They know they have the share. So cleanliness is not seen as important, but it mentions of all things of purity, purity in making your money is actually the most important. If that's pure, everything will be pure. If your money is pure, your life will be pure. Your money is impure, then your consciousness will be impure, everything else will become impure. So that's there. So that's not a principle that's really... If you say it, people will, you know, those who come from more of a virtuous upbringing will agree with it. But if they won't necessarily put it up as a first principle. And those who are not, they may not appreciate it. They may not think it's great. You know, it's like you want to get rid of Muggsy, right? So you drive by and you shoot him, and then afterwards you laugh. Okay, we got Muggsy and we got three mushrooms. Right? You were just some innocent guys standing there. They're none of their business. But, you know, for my economics, we got to get rid of, you know, the guy. Even though we killed three other people in the process. But, you know, they're stupid for being there. As if, you know, there was a sign put up and says, hey, we're going to snuff this guy, you know, in about 2 seconds. You know, if you're smart, you're going to move out of the way. You know, no. Is that so... That aspect, so that cleanliness in their personal, their environment, in their money, all these things, that's not necessarily seen as practical, though it is. Like that. Detachment is not seen as practical, because, as we mentioned before, as there's always the problem that detachment means I don't deal with it. Okay, if I'm detached from the family, means I dump the family. And then, okay, then the family can handle it because, okay, we're devotees, we have the Varnashram system, Prabhupada said, and okay, they've dumped and this and that. We can go on because Krishna's there, Krishna's taking care, and okay. And they maintain their standards and all that. Then they watch as the man who dumped them marries someone else and starts a new family. And then it's like, hey, what's going on here? You know, then it's like something's going wrong. Okay, we can tolerate it, it's within the rules, okay. We don't like it, but okay. So then it comes down, the principle is, you know, people are neglected and all that because of detachment. It's not. They're neglected because of the mode of passion and laziness. Mode of passion means you give up an activity because of the trouble it takes. So you're only willing to take trouble if you have attachment. If you don't have attachment, you're not willing to do it. Yeah, because you get your taste, your material taste out of it. So if your taste is by performing your duties properly, that's your material taste, then you'll always do. So therefore, the Vedic thing is be detached but perform the duty. Because basically you may be detached, but there's still some attachment there, there's still some need. That's why you're in that situation. Or even if you don't have the detachment in the beginning, you have that attachment, but by dealing with it, you'll, in the right way, you'll become detached. So then the natural thing is, as soon as you become a little detached, you don't want to deal with it. But that's not dutiful. If it's still your duty to take care, you take care. Like that, until such time as it's your duty to not take care.
Continuity.
Yes, it is continuity. It goes through. It functions that way. So that ability to perform duties, even though you don't have any material benefit from it, that is probably one of the most misunderstood things, at least within the American culture. The European and basically the rest of the world basically understands that there are things you may have to do, but like that, you know? Even with the American, those who have old world values have the same. But the modern projection is, no, what's good for you, you take. What's not good for you, you know, it's just, you just, you know, take out your ray gun and blow it away. It's just, that's all, you know. That's the way it works, you know, Rambo and these kind of guys. Just, it's in their way, you know, just you remove it. Like that. So it's a very unfortunate scenario is that the American like culture has pervaded all the broken down, you know, the fabric of any, you know, civilization in the world, and at the same time as it also breaks down the fabric of the devotional culture. Like that. Because the whole point of the American is don't think, do. Because if you think, you won't do it. You know? Like that. Yeah, you know, you put it on your card. Yeah, that's easy enough. You know, but then when the bill comes, that's another thing. You know? So that's the thing is buy first, think later. But the Vedic, you know, and any sane person is think first, then you decide whether you actually need to buy or not, you have the resources to buy or not, this and that. So that's the thing. It's just like, marry the girl. Yeah, then let's figure out, okay, well, I guess we should stay somewhere, huh? Okay, well, where should we stay? What should we do? They start from there. I guess while we're staying here, I guess, you know, they want some rent. I guess we got to pay some money. I guess we should make some money. What should we do? You know? What you see in the Vedic is no. They have everything set up, and then they get married. So it's a difference, because you know what you're dealing. You know the field you're dealing with. Grihastha life means a sphere of attachment. Those attachments means facilities. You have those facilities, then you invite a family into that facilities. But the other is just you want the kid. You have no way to take care of it, but they want. Right? So that's all it takes. So that's the problem is that mundane attachment is the drive rather than spiritual attachment is the drive. So that's all the problems in the world come down to that. And the more you increase that attachment, then the gross materialist thinks that qualifies them as a better person. I'm more attached to my country, so I'm better. I'm more attached to my family or my children or my money. This is just gross materialism. It's just mundane. You're attached to Krishna. That's glorious. Mother Yashoda is in this, insanely attached mother, but she's attached to Krishna. So that's glorious. You know? But here, that attachment is no glory. it's an inspiration and impetus to take care, but it's purely mundane. It's nothing special. You go over to try to play with the baby cow or the baby dog or anything like that, and then you see what the mother animal does, right? They'll come over you, bite you or scratch you. They'll do something. So therefore that's every animal is attached to their facility, their home. Like the dog's got his little patch of dirt that he's in charge. You'll see dogs, another dog comes in, they'll run up to a particular point. There's a point where they stop, and from that point they bark. They don't go over that line, because that's someone else's territory. That's the end of their territory. And they'll stand there, all three dogs in a line, barking at the one dog who came into their territory. And bark long enough that he keeps going. And then from that point, they'll turn back. So they're a piece of dirt, who they're attached to, their family, their money. That's just mundane. So that's the problem, is attachment is it. If you're attached, you're supremely qualified. Like that. Wouldn't have a clue how to take care, how to deal, what's the psychology of a family. Wouldn't have a clue. But because they're attached, they're supremely qualified. That's all. It's an overnight thing. Right? Right?
It's a Christian thing.
Oh, it's a Christian thing. Oh, okay.
Take care of your family.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, yeah, you find that. In Judaism, they're a little more liberal with the whole thing. They're attached, there's a strong bonding. But it's, they can goof on each other. That's really how they spend their time, right? Goofing on each other at the dinner table. Yeah. I guess they just take themselves too seriously. So the thing is it's nice, it's an impetus therefore to do the duty, but then you have to see what is the duty. So if in doing your duty then you disturb everybody else to do your duty, then that's not your duty. Because the duties are designed that each duty coincides with the others perfectly. It's just like you have a big jigsaw puzzle. Each piece is unique, and each piece fits into another place in the whole thing to make the whole thing. But if in putting the one in you destroy so many others, then you've broken the, you don't end up with a picture. At the end, it's not a pretty picture. It just won't be good. You missed it. So that's the difficulty. Because of this attachments, then people become blinded, and they think whatever comes into their mind to be what's right. And what is against that is wrong. So that's even the motive ignorance. That's not even motive passion. Because passion means you have a desire, you move towards it. There is desire, because the passion is what they want to get from it. You're only going to be attached if you're going to get something from it. That's the thing also. If they're attached only for duty, then they're not going to bother somebody else, because they're going to be dutiful in all things. Right? But if in fulfilling their so-called duty towards their children and family, then they will go against duty and disturb everybody else. That means their attraction for their material facilities, family, and everything is material. It's self-centered. It's not based on duty. So it's selfish. So their attachment to their, whatever they're attached to, is selfish. It has nothing to do with duty. Because otherwise, if it was that attachment was based on duty, a dutiful person is dutiful in all spheres. And a person who's not dutiful is not dutiful in any sphere. That was the principle that Upayaja said to Drupad. Because Drupad wanted a son that could kill Dronacharya. Dronacharya is a very powerful Brahmin, both as a Brahmin and who wants to take him on. There was no Kshatriya in the world would be foolish enough to take him on in the battle. He's been trained by Parasuram. Parasuram already proved that he could destroy not one, not two, but 21 generations of Kshatriyas, down to the last guy. So, and then he's given all his weapons and knowledge of it to Drona. He's austere, so he's also the same Varna. And Brahmins, create and destroy planets at will. You know, so it's just, you just don't mess with these guys. You know? So no one wants to do anything. No one wants to deal with this. So then they go, and Yajna is materialistic enough to do. But Upayajna, but he's not qualified. Upayajna is qualified. He could do the yajna, and it would have the potency to get the child. But he's not material. He doesn't do anything material. Right? Because he only performs his duties. And he has no material purpose, so therefore he has no material duties. But then after Drupad pleaded, you know, for 1 year he just does menial service to him, right? He's a king of big, the Panchal is a big kingdom. It's not a small kingdom, it's a big kingdom. So then for that king to render menial service to this Brahmin for 1 year, that means personally, not with all his entourage. Then he says, okay, you know, you're sincere. Says, I saw my brother once while we were walking through the forest pick up a fruit off the ground without turning the fruit to look at it to see if it's clean or if someone ate it or a worm was anything. He just bit it. So that means he has a sense of uncleanliness. So someone who's unclean in one thing will be unclean in everything else also. So he said, therefore, he won't mind doing this for you, though it's an unclean job. So you ask him, he'll naturally ask me to help. And because he's my elder brother, and it's my duty to assist him. But it's his thing. He's the priest. I'm just the assistant. So he can continue in his principle. I don't do anything material, but I'm assisting him. So that principle is there. So when there's uncleanness, is what you can see. So if there's a lack of duty in dealings with people on one level, you know that it's there in all the others. So that nasty attached parent who can't deal with anybody is also self-centered towards those principles of that they so-called are divinely attached to and have the divine right to. You know, whatever it is. You know, mothers, fathers, or, you know, go down in charge, or, you know, whatever it is that they feel they have the divine right over, but they're nasty, it means that it's selfish. It's not, it doesn't actually have any good quality to it. That makes sense? But if it's there because there's a sense of duty, then it has a virtue to it. Then it's that. But then their dealings with it won't break that principle of virtue, that duty. So that also is very much, that's part of the first thing we mentioned. It's just, you have your purpose, you just get it done, it doesn't matter what. So that's animal society. That's how they function. Human society follows duties and rules of interaction. With that. Otherwise, it's otherwise like that. You know, if there wasn't something to keep it in line, then everybody would just do this. Manu mentions if the king doesn't regulate and keep people in line, then it says that the strong will roast the weak on a spit like a fish. You know, like that. They'll cook them all. Right? You know, marriages won't work, you can't keep any money or land, everybody will just be stealing from each other, taking everything, it'll just be a big mess. Like that. So there has to be form, otherwise there is no social structure. That's what happens at the end of Kali Yuga. Just the whole thing breaks down and it's everybody for themselves. So it just turns back into, you know, wild tribals. That makes sense. Okay, so I think we should probably stop here. So weave it over time. Rajaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai, Nitai Gaur.
Jai.